KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Ross Reynolds and Marcy Selman, but we can match their urgency
pep. Their
and their pep.
And I have a challenge. Actually, it's not my challenge. It's the Anonymous Broadcaster Circle Member Challenge.
You bring it to us, though.
Right. I'm bringing it. We need 20 of you to pledge at the $150 level. 20 of you at $150 to be matched by these Anonymous Broadcaster Circle members, collecting all their money to entice you in, new members, renewing members. If $150 is a level that works for you, help us get this challenge met. Double your money right now, 206-543-9595.
People become members of the Broadcast Circle when they contribute $1,000 or more, and they say, yes, I support this public radio service because it's important to me. And then they get in a big circle, and they throw their money into the center, and they count it up, and then they say, well, here's a challenge. Here's a challenge for you, $3,000. If 20 people match our money by pledging $150, we can get that additional $3,000, and they are happy to do it. We are waiting for you to call on this Thursday, 4 days into our pledge drive, a $14,000 challenge for weekday. But, you know, Morning Edition listeners brought it with $23,000 over 3 hours. Weekday listeners who are ready to hear about the Senate break, who are ready to hear a conversation with David Allen Greer, Eddie Wong, a radio retrospective on advertising, a little bit about from Cashman and Keister about the 206. We are waiting to hear from you. 206-543-9595.
And if you're thinking about doing this $150 match, double your money, when you break it down, that's still paying less than $3 a week. And when you think about your life and how much you spend, what $3 a day, some of you, on coffee, $3 a week for the news and entertainment you hear on this radio station isn't so bad.
You know, once a week, we go out to lunch together.
We do.
Katie and Jason and Amina and I, we go out to lunch because, you know, it's team building. And I looked in my wallet and I said, well, I have $11 in my wallet. Can I pay for lunch with $11 in this day and age? That's going to be tough.
Well, that's the thing that we've been saying, is it seems like every time we go out to lunch, we end up spending too much money.
So instead, if you're like us, don't go to lunch. Just, wander up and down the street and be hungry and pledge your support at
Less than $3 a week. At the $150 level at 206-543-9595. And if you do that, you're doubling your money, which would be like you were paying $6 a week.
Yeah.
But you're not. You're still paying less than $3 a week.
Yeah. Fried egg sandwich. 206-543-9595, my friends. If you would give us a call and help us get our day rolling with a great pledge drive response, a great response from you. You listen, you enjoy, you laugh, you cry, you get angry, you send letters about grammar. There are many ways which you communicate with us, and many ways which we communicate to you.
Yeah.
Words are hard this morning. But the most important thing right now is for you to join us and show your support. We need your dollars, we need your ears, and we need you to make a phone call right now at 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. You can pledge online at KUOW.org, but any way you do it now. Thanks.
Thanks.
This is Seymour Skinner. Anybody who doesn't contribute to KUOW to keep fine public radio on the air, you'll see me in detention. That means you.
Don't upset Principal Skinner. Give us a call, 206-543-9595.
Support for KUOW comes from Propel Insurance.
Support for NPR comes from the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business and Executive MBA program at Yeshiva University. 52 degrees in Seattle and cloudy. Forecast says we're going to have rain through the day. We've already had some. It may be raining now where you are. Today's predicted high is 59. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 9:09, KUOW, 94.9 Seattle.
As painful as it was growing up, I found my own America, I carved out my own place, and I shared my story, and it's just my dumb luck that people in New York related and appreciated it.
I didn't have this big picture for comedy. It wasn't like, I'm going to do a special, then I'm going to get my own show, which will fail, which will only lead me to more obscurity. No, I didn't plan all that. This is classy stuff. I love public radio. I listen to it all day, all night.
There's David Alan Greer. He was with us. We're going to hear from him. Eddie Wong, a comedian, a restaurateur. We're going to talk to him about his work. But we start with what's happening in Olympia. The mostly Republican majority in the Washington State Senate has unveiled its budget proposal. It would put $1 billion more into basic education. It does not raise taxes. The spending blueprint released Wednesday contrasts sharply with what Governor Jay Inslee proposed last week. Here's what Austin Jenkins found out.
Like Governor Inslee, the Senate proposes to make a significant down payment on the Washington Supreme Court's finding that the state isn't adequately funding K-12 education. Some of the money would go to high-poverty schools and to fund an expansion of all-day kindergarten. The budget also proposes to give colleges and universities a $300 million boost in exchange for a 3% tuition break. Unlike Governor Inslee, the Senate budget does not propose to extend expiring tax hikes or close tax exemptions. Here's Senate Majority Leader Rodney Tom.
We need to get off this storyline that we need more money for education. We have funded education in this budget. We have reprioritized education in this budget and no new revenue.
The Senate budget would make a controversial cut to a program for the aged, blind, and disabled. Some minority Democrats have signed on to the spending plan, but insist in the end, the final go-home budget deal will have to include some new revenue. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
Andy Hill is a Republican state senator from Redmond. He chairs the Senate Ways and Means Committee. Andy Hill, thank you for talking to us.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Let me start with that controversial cut, as Austin put it. What is being cut in specifics in your budget?
We're actually reconfiguring a couple programs. We're trying to capture savings and control spending in one of those programs. But what we're really focusing on are truly the most vulnerable. And we've got a budget that has enhancements for adult dental. It has enhancements for mental health. We've been very, very thoughtful about our developmentally disabled. We have enhancements in the budget for them. Children's food assistance, we're actually increasing that. We're also expanding Medicaid, which is going to give health insurance for 300,000 people that are currently uninsured in the state. So I think that you've got a budget that is we really did focus on those that are in need and are the most vulnerable.
So is the controversial cut a cut to the Disability Lifeline program?
The Disability Lifeline program, it's formally that. It's now the Housing and Essential Needs program, and I believe they call it ABD. So yes, we moved some of those people into the Housing and Needs program. We kind of merged the two programs. And we also move people into private facilitators that help them get federal help.
How is that a savings? What's the effort that makes that a savings?
I'm sorry?
What makes that a savings overall, moving those people around and shifting the dollars?
Well, you're able to save because you're not giving them a cash grant. You're also able to save because some of the people that we need to help them get federal funds will now no longer have the state providing that. We'll have both nonprofits and private people private lawyers essentially doing that. And we're one of only about five or six states that actually has state assistance for this type of a program.
Is part of the shift dependent on the expansion of Medicaid from the federal government?
Yes, we'll see a lot of those people be able to get Medicaid medical as well.
Does the shift take place over time? Once we get the Medicaid expansion, that's when the shift takes place. So in 2014,
and in fact, we keep the program running for 6 months. So people currently in the program, we'll make sure we move them through, so it's not having the carpet pulled out.
It relies on $170 million in fund transfers and reversions. What are those?
What you see in the government where we have a budget that we control is about $32 billion, and about twice that when you add in federal and other funds. And you've got funds at the end of the year that haven't spent all their money. And so what we'll do is we will essentially clean that out, clean up that unspent money, and move it into the general fund.
Is that sustainable in the 2015-2017 budget?
Well, it's interesting. We've got this is the first time we're under the requirement to balance the budget for 4 years. It's a new law. It's the first one in the country that requires us to balance the budget for 4 years. And so you have to be very mindful of one-time things because they won't work for 4 years. We actually have already run our budget through, and it does balance over 4 years. And it has a healthy $1.4 billion fund balance at the end of a four-year time frame. So you can do some one-time things because you'll have those every budget. You'll have those extra dollars left over. But everything else we've done with an eye to making it sustainable. So one of the goals when we started was when we show up in Olympia next January, we don't want to be faced with a multi-billion-dollar deficit, which is exactly what legislatures have been faced with for the last 4 or 5 years. So this is a sustainable budget, and it will balance for 4 years. And I think that's really it's a new way of doing things in Olympia when you're looking long term and not using a lot of the one-time gimmicks that have been so popular in the past.
Andy Hill is Republican State Senator from Redmond. He chairs the Senate Ways and Means Committee. $166 million in a school trust fund transfer. Ross Hunter, the House Appropriations Chair and a Democrat, called that clearly unconstitutional. Why is he wrong?
Oh, he's wrong. We have it's clear in the Constitution that you can do this. It's been done before. We have precedents for it, and I think that Representative Hunter may have been thrown a little bit off because he's been famous for saying there's no way you can fund education at $1 billion and not raise taxes, and we did it. And I think that he's kind of scrambling right now and trying to shoot holes in it as opposed to looking at it constructively and looking at the negotiation, the compromise will have to come to in the end.
$157 million in unspecified efficiencies. You kind of run into a little trouble here being so vague. Can you specify some of the efficiencies?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really following Governor Inslee's lead. One of his big themes during his campaign was the way he was going to be able to reprioritize government and make a huge down payment in basic education was with lean management in the government. And so what we are doing is we are using those efficiencies. We're going to realize a lot of those lean management principles that he spoke of so much during his campaign. And he is the executive, so he runs these agencies. He appoints the heads of those agencies. So we are assuming that we will get those efficiencies through this new management style that he's talked about so much.
You believe in that? You believe in it?
Well, it's interesting. I do believe that because we had a number of deep dives into a couple of the agencies where we had one or two senators where it was their area of expertise. They got in with staff and they really looked deeply into a couple agencies. They turned over rocks looking for those efficiencies. And it's interesting. They ended up finding more savings than we are assuming in all the other agencies on a percentage basis. So I am confident we can find those efficiencies and those savings.
Of course, Governor Inslee didn't like your proposal. The Senate proposal to address our basic education obligations is funded in large part through cuts to vital services for children, family, vulnerable adults. You would cut child care subsidies, he says, for low-income families, reduce long-term care services, make deep cuts in our state prison, force us to close our state parks, and fall short of my plan for expanding early childhood education opportunities. Where is he incorrect?
He's incorrect on every one of those points. In fact, I think he wrote that press release before the budget was released. Because on every one of those points, they're absolutely false. We fund the park system at $17 million. We actually enhance our developmentally disabled spending, our mental health spending. Early education, we expand at 10%, both in the number of slots we open up and in the amount that we pay those providers. We believe that is actually the most we can add, given the current system, the capacity. It can't grow any faster. We actually add more to higher education than Senator Inslee's budget, along with a proposed tuition and a decrease of 3%. Governor Inslee is proposing a 10% increase in tuition at University of Washington, WSU. If you want to talk about balancing the budget on the backs of the middle class, I think the Governor Inslee proposal does exactly that.
Well, where are you? Who is paying for some increases here? If you have a budget that you're saying closes the shortfall, gives $1 billion more to schools. Are teachers getting their raises? Are state employees paying more for their health care? Where's the money coming from?
Well, it's interesting. The state employees, we ratify all of the state collective bargaining agreements. So the state employees will see a 3% increase. They'll see a 1% cost of living increase in the second year, as long as revenue continues. Their health insurance costs stay the same. Teachers get a 1.9% restoration. Principals get a 3% restoration. You know, it's interesting, Steve, because this is a bipartisan budget. Over the last 2 months, we meet every night with a group of senators and staff to build the budget. And in that room, there were two Democratic senators, Senator Jim Hargrove and Sharon Nelson, were in the room every single night as we went painstakingly through every line in the budget. And as we looked at that, it was really, you know, we look at these things like, okay, do we increase spending here? Do we see if we can capture savings there? And so I think what you'll find is a very thoughtful and thorough approach to the budget, where it was incredibly inclusive, incredibly transparent. I believe Senator Hargrove in the press conference, he said, "I consider the process a bipartisan process, the most transparent process that's ever happened."
Still got to get those folks all to vote. Tell me something. Do you tap the state rainy day fund?
We do not. We believe that when you've got 6.6% revenue growth, we have $2 billion more coming into the state than we did last biennium. When you have that kind of growth, we really don't think that is a rainy day.
Do you eliminate any programs under natural resources? Department of Ecology, Department of Fish and Wildlife, Department of Natural Resources, do they all still get funded?
They still get funded. I don't believe we cut any programs in there, but I don't have the specifics.
Are there budgets cut?
Excuse me?
Are there budgets cut overall?
Well, we capture a lot of efficiencies and a lot of savings in there. Yes, we do.
Any across-the-board cuts for all agencies?
No.
And 732 is suspended, the initiative 732?
732 is repurposed in our plan, and what we do is we take those dollars and we drive them into basic education. And our plan is to do that in the future as well. So right now, 732 doesn't qualify as basic education, and really to satisfy the Supreme Court's McCleary ruling, you need to be putting money into basic education.
So what does that mean? Does that mean class size is smaller, or just it's a different definition of what is appropriate for spending that money to make education more effective?
Yes. Yeah.
I see. You don't make any cuts anywhere, and yet you're still able to. It's all through efficiencies?
Absolutely. You're going to see places where we spend less in some places and spend more in other places. And, you know, Steve, I equate it to sitting around your kitchen table when you're figuring out your yearly budget. You'll sit there and say, okay, I've got a little more money coming in, but I'm not going to spend, if I've got 5% more, I got this 5% raise, I'm not going to spend exactly 5% more on everything in my family's budget.
So where are you spending less?
Pardon me?
Where do you spend less?
I think the important thing is where we're spending more. I mean, we're spending $1 billion more into K-12 education. We're spending $300 million more into higher ed, and we're increasing our early education by over 20%. So it's really, you know, if you look at it, we have really reprioritized the way we spend dollars. There, as I said, there's $2 billion more coming in this year in the state's coffers. Almost 90% of that is going to education.
Yeah. Where are you spending less, though?
Pardon me?
Where are you spending less in the budget?
Well, you know, we're spending less on a number of state-only programs that are now being absorbed by Medicaid expansion and the Affordable Care Act. We actually get substantial savings there because now people that are uninsured or were on state-only programs are now going to be covered by Medicaid or get into the new health care exchange where they'll have subsidized health care.
Andy Hill, I appreciate you taking the time, breaking it down for us.
Steve, likewise.
Thank you. We'll continue to cover this. We'll get responses from some of the Democrats as time goes forward, and we'll also hope to get a response from the governor as well and some of the people involved. Andy Hill is a Republican state senator from Redmond, chairs the Senate Ways and Means Committee. Senate Republican majority put out their budget in Olympia. These are the kind of conversations we like to have just to start out the morning, little numbers, and it's what we hope you also appreciate and why we come to you two times a year and say, could you also support public radio? Because our budget comes from you and the listeners who support it and want it to be sustained, this institution, and the ideas and the news accounts, news stories heard across the state and across the region. So we ask you to spend some money, Call 206-543-9595. Call 1-866-677-5869. Help us meet our goal. Get another $3,000 from the anonymous Broadcaster Circle members who have put up $3,000. If 20 people pledge $150, 10 have pledged. We need 10 more right now.
10 more, 206-543-9595. Some of you are budgeters, and you have to sit down and actually think about what can I afford to pay for this service. Some of you are going by the gut. You know, you're just saying, you know what, $100 feels right, and I'm going to do it.
I would propose that we get the people who budget to talk to the people who go by their gut and work together on this.
Well, that seems complicated, and okay, we need to make this goal of 10 more people pledging at the $150 level. So if when you hear $150, you think about this radio station and how much you listen to it and how many times you quote things that you've heard on this radio station, and $150 feels good, or you know it fits in the budget for your charitable giving that you've lined out for the year, give us a call at 206-543-9595. You can call toll-free 1-866-NPR-KUOW, 1-866-677-5869. You can go online at kuow.org, but if you want to do this $150 challenge and get your $150 turned into $300, then you have to call 206-543-9595.
And it's not magic. And we're not expecting, we're just expecting it to happen. We know it will happen. We're not hoping it will happen when you call and pledge your support. Kelly wrote, my 5-year-old daughter is blind. I want specifics on how the GOP budget will affect her. Well, I didn't get it, but we will investigate. We will find out. We get feedback from you and you help us do a better job. And that is what we expect. You know so much more about all these issues than I do, than Katie does, than any of us do, because you're in the trenches on these issues. And then you give us a question like this, and we're going to find out. And that's what this partnership is all about. You help us by helping us understand what's happening in the world. But we also need your help to sustain it. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. Give us a call. Help us make our goal. Let's get 9 more folks to call right now. What do you think? Don't you think that's a good idea? We could do that.
I think it's a great idea.
Get 9 more folks to call?
Yeah, 206-543-9595. You're one of a big community, but we are counting on you.
Yeah, we're counting on you. We were waiting a little bit to hear your phone ring, and now I think it's time for your phone to ring. So give us a call, 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. Please do not delay. This is how we get it done. You call, we listen, we take your money. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. We want to hear from you. David Alan Greer is an actor. He's a comedian. He's been in the business for over 30 years, best known for his work on the sketch comedy show In Living Color. But he likes to be known for some of the things he's done of late. He was an actor. He studied acting at Yale. He got his start on Broadway. When he was here, I asked him how he made the transition from being a serious actor to a comic.
I do remember we did a stand-up show at Yale, but it was very collegiate. Hey, you know that professor who always wears his plaid? You know, we did it, you know, like a campus thing. And I came out of school. I was on Broadway. And what really happened is a lot of my friends were comics.
Kenan, wait, that just hold that. That's a pretty big transition. I came out of school. I was on Broadway.
Yeah. That's true.
What happened?
My first job.
Really?
It was my first professional job I starred in. The first. It was about Jackie Robinson. It was a musical nominated for a Tony. And so then that kind of brought me into the business. And I started working. I did Soldier's Play with Denzel Washington. Sam Jackson was in it. The late, great Adolf Caesar at the Negro Ensemble. I started doing movies. I worked with Robert Altman in my first film, Streamers. Yeah, we won the Golden Lion, Best Acting Ensemble at Venice Film Festival that year. And so I was off and running. But when I came to Soldier Story, I met Robert Townsend, who introduced me to the Wayans family, Kenan and Sean. Well, Sean was a little kid then, and Marlon was a little baby, you know, 14 or something. Anyway, we all became friends, and my nightly ritual when I was there during pilot season would hang out with these comics in comedy clubs. And it's just by osmosis. You should do time. So I started doing open mics for fun, And that's kind of how that element got in there. But I never planned to, I didn't have this big picture for comedy. It wasn't like, I'm going to do a special, then I'm going to get my own show, which will fail, which will only lead me to more obscurity. No, I didn't plan all that, but it was something I did and when I was between jobs. So when In Living Color hit, after the first month, my agent calls and says, we have 15 colleges and universities that want to book you. What should we tell them? So that's what led to...
Wow.
Yeah, because it was that Living Color was that hot. I mean, it hit that hard. So
here's a little. We have a little clip from Living Color, Men on Films.
Uh-oh. Which brings us to the time in this show when we discuss our two favorite films on video of all times. Now, for me, it's got to be the movie Big, starring Tom Hanks as a man with a little boy inside him. I believe we can all relate to that. For all the fine films on video cassette, let's give it our patented films on video snap. Two snaps and a rewind.
a cultural touchdown. Two snaps and a rewind.
I guess it was. It was. It's funny. We did the pilot, and I remember my agent came, and we did Men on at the pilot, and she calls me the next day, and she goes, "You know, they're doing the snaps at Paramount." I was like, it's at Universal now. Everyone, this is taking the city by storm.
It was pretty funny.
I was like, wow.
Do you think that that show, well, don't you think that show had challenged assumption, broke barriers, came at a good time in terms of race? Or do you think it was like
way,
you do, right? Yeah. So did you guys think about it? Did you guys talk about it?
Not at the time. I mean, it's funny. We talked about it, but I didn't see it. You know, Jim Carrey, interestingly, he would sit in my dressing room that first year and go, this is history. This is history. They're going to be talking about this for forever. But you have to remember, in 1990, we had cell phones, but I think my talk time was 15 minutes. We had computers and everything, but the internet isn't what it is now. I think my search engine was Gopher back then. I didn't know. I'll give you an example. I did a play recently, and sitting in the dressing room, you know, in La Jolla. It wasn't recently. It was a few years ago. And everybody in the cast had their computers. And we started talking about Living Color. They all punched up, via YouTube, their favorite sketch. Another guy punched up a clip of me at the Tonys in 1981. The availability of information was not what it is now. So I could not have anticipated in 20 years that there would be this whole other generation appreciating the work because it's so available.
It's funny, NPR did a story this morning on cultural references and how we don't have four networks, so the cultural references are sometimes broken up. People don't always understand the same things. But I think against that, it's just what you said, because of the availability, we all start to swim in it over time.
Yeah, we cut, clip, and paste and make our own cultural scrapbooks. When I did Maya Angelou on SNL, these are the cardinal rules of comedy. Someone asks you to do you, Lauren Michaels said, do you do any impersonations? Now, the cardinal rule is you got to name someone, number one, that no one's ever done. Therefore, you cannot fail. So as a joke, I said Maya Angelou. No one had ever done Maya Angelou in 1996. And they were like, really? I'd never done it. But I knew I could not fail. So
you just made her up. Did you make her up right there?
On the spot. I said, I can nail that. So then we started talking about what if she really sold out? What if she started doing commercials? And that led to these Maya Angelou things, which killed. Not only that, if you go on YouTube, they're Maya Angelou tributes. So they're dudes that are doing their Maya Angelou. I'm the first person to ever do it, but that's how it happened.
Wait, didn't you do it? Didn't it recur in that episode?
Yes, because right. we started riffing. The writers started riffing Pennzoil, Butterfingers. You know, I hosted the show twice, and they asked me a third time. I couldn't do it. And they asked me to join the cast. I couldn't do it. But anyway, this was one of those things where it hit so big that we kept doing it. But then I got really jealous. Other people would do it.
How was she selling Pennzoil? I don't remember that. How was
Pennzoil? You, sir, are a warrior.
You know.
With words, your bullets are the vernacular. you attack society. You know, Pennzoil.
You know, that whole thing. But I was booked with Maya Angelou to appear at a traditionally black college for some festival. And I was like, really? This is going to be awesome. But I think someone actually told her who I was, and it mysteriously disappeared after a couple of weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I would have hoped she would have had the sense of humor for that.
I don't know. I don't know what really happened. They say, well, they've changed your schedule. You're no longer needed. So that's all I could tell you.
David Alan Greer is going to be how many shows? I keep
two tonight, two tomorrow. Tonight. There's five altogether. But
7:30, very limited tickets. 10 o'clock, very limited. Saturday sold out. What's the difference between and Sunday was sold out? What's the difference between you were there Sunday too, right? Or just Saturday? No, that's right. What's the difference between a 7:30 show and a 10 p.m. show for you?
Probably the audience.
That's it.
Yeah, because for me, I'm giving it to you. But
are you writing all your material?
Yes, let's hope so.
Well, I mean, you're improvising some.
Yeah, some of it. I mean, some of it is with the audience and also...
Let us hope so.
Yeah, while some people buy material...
I see, yes. You don't?
No, I never have. I failed on my own. But it's you're saying the difference between 7:30 and 10:30. 7:30 is more of a date audience. You know, it's early. They've probably gone out to dinner.
Not as drunk.
Exactly, in a nutshell. But that's what I found. Later shows, you know, here, Seattle is very, you know, this is intelligent, so I can talk more about politics and, you know.
More public radio jokes.
Oh, I love
more. More jokes where you include the names of medical drugs. She did on the Adam Carolla show, right?
Estadirol. Yes. That, again, I mean, love Adam Carolla. Love Dr. Drew. He's a dear friend. And it just was spur of the moment. And it just, we started. Most of that was because we're in the studio. It was to make them laugh. And Dr. Drew lost it. He was crying, spilled his water. He and Adam.
Well, I've heard. We listened to it on the magic of the radio, and yeah. He was just throwing out names of drugs, and you were turning them all into characters. They were living characters.
It started though off the cuff. Now he makes me do it.
He does.
Yeah, he makes me do it. But it really started when Dr. Drew. We had a caller who is like, "Yeah, I'm feeling really depressed. I can't leave my room, and I won't stop smoking. I smoke closed cigarettes, but too many." He was like, "Well, here's what you need. You need to get on a mood stabilizer." And, you know, he starts naming all these drugs, and I was like, really, dude, lighten up, you know, and I was teasing him. So that's how it started.
I want to ask you about Broadway, but before I do, real quick, so you've done a lot of radio.
I have. I wanted to do a radio show. I mean, we were talking in the car. I don't want to do a podcast because I don't want to do that to the world. Oh, there's too many podcasts, too many comedians.
Well, there's a lot of radio shows.
Yeah, but there's a podcast is basically an open mic for a comedian, and he's never given the light. So they just keep talking. So, no. Maybe I will. I don't know.
But a radio? I'm like, you live in L.A., right?
Yeah, I love radio. But it's the whole thing has changed now. Like, now I don't need to do a radio show. I can do my own. I can do a podcast, which is basically your own radio show. Do you believe that or what? I'm trying to...
No, I believe it. I was thinking about Mark Maron, that WTF show. I mean, that
it's
guy's...
a podcast.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And he's got a lot of people listening.
He does. But, I mean, that takes... work. I mean, he's interviewing. I heard him interview Judd Apatow. You know, I don't know. I because he's.
Whereas radio show, live radio show, you just come in. You just go.
Here we go. You just by the seat of your pants.
That's right.
Podcast is real. No, but I'm saying he's built his following slowly, and now it's like anything. You know, it's like Girls or Louie. It's the show that what are they doing now? It's I want to get in. Sean Penn's going to be on Girls. You know, that'll be great.
That is interesting. The movie stars in, yeah, multiple platforms.
Yeah.
All right, 2012, co-star on Revival of Porgy and Bess. You played Sport and Life, right?
Mm-hmm.
The pimp. You got the pimp character.
Pimp and a drug dealer.
Well, very good.
Yeah.
Typecast. Right. Here's a little taste of that.
Give in to no man with 900 years.
Poirier and Best, that's a big deal.
It is. It was amazing to do, to work with Audra McDonald, 5-time Tony winner, Diane Paulus, Susan Laurie Parks. The cast was awesome. It was, you know, Broadway's great. We would do these discussion sessions, and they would say, how do you do it every night? I was like, what are you on Broadway, man? What are you, nuts? People clapping. I love it. I had so much fun doing it. But it was a long time. It was like a year. So that's the longest run I've ever done on Broadway.
A year. How long were you on in Race, the Mammoth play?
That was about 6 months. It was a limited production for us, the main cast. It went on after we all left. James Spader and Kerry Washington and Richard Thomas stayed, and we all left. So.
Did you like doing Mamet lines?
Oh, David Mamet has been one of my theatrical heroes since I started, you know, since I was a student. To meet him, to work with him in a new play, which was in my resume until I had done Race. That was something that was missing, like to do a straight play on Broadway, but a new play written by David Mamet, directed by him, was a dream. He was so much fun. He really loves actors, which is kind of rare to experience in your career.
So you played Henry, right?
Yes.
I like this line. World goes to sleep at night, Mr. Strickland wakes up and it needs two things, a cup of coffee and some vicious gossip.
Of course, as we're Manti Te'o.
There we are, back right to it.
Yeah. It really was a joy. And James Spader is still a friend, and Carrie's one of my good friends. And it was just awesome. It was cool.
I think Maya Angelou's a public radio listener.
Oh, of course. Yeah. She is.
It's
Rust. My Maya Angelou is rusty. But,
you need to get her to pledge to public radio. A pledge spot.
This is Maya Angelou. Roses are red, violets are blue. Give to public radio because I told you to. Freedom.
That was David Alan Greer, comedian, actor. He was interviewed January 18th. Of this year. He returned to Broadway to play Sport and Life in Porgy and Bess last year. He is the author of Barack Like Me, a memoir from 2009.
And this is exactly why you listen to Weekday and to KOW, is the opportunity to get into a longer conversation with people like David Alan Greer. Likelihood is you're probably never going to meet him in real life, but now you just got to hang out with him for the last 15 minutes.
We all met him. Our number is 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869 for you to show your support on this pledge drive for public radio.
When you support KUOW, you're pitching in to make every program possible, including Radioactive Youth Media. Radioactive gives high school-aged youth the chance to discover public radio journalism and to make their voices heard.
For Radioactive, I'm Farhan Moore.
For Radioactive, I'm Antonia Dorn.
Radioactive, I'm Katie and Van Wert.
For Radioactive, I am Fisher Zosso.
For Radioactive, I'm Keelan Anderson.
For Radioactive, I'm Michelle Dutra.
That's me. Oh, my God.
How is that? That's good.
Radioactive allows more people to experience the fun and the power of public radio. And it's only possible with your support. Make your pledge now at KUOW.org.
Or call 206-543-9595. Radioactive, our youth in radio training program. It's brought such talents as Aminel Alsadi to the public radio world, who now works on this show. And it's brought a lot of other great young people into the world of creating good, interesting, thoughtful media.
Developed from Weekday High, which we started back in the aughts with your support, and we were able to expand it over the years. It was a summer program. Now it's year-round. It brings new voices, young people, new communities into the world of public radio, which is what you want. You want this institution to be around for your children, your grandchildren, your neighbors, your family members, folks down the street and around the country. And that's why we ask you to support it. 206-543-9595 is the number to call so that the volunteers will answer and you'll be able to say, you know, I'm going to pledge $250 a year for this public radio service because that is how important it is to me. Or you call 1-866-677-5869 and do it now. They want to hear from you. They are waiting. And you can pledge at whatever you're comfortable with, $75 a year, $1,000 a year, $50,000 a year.
We all feel partly responsible for making sure that this Earth and our community is good for the next generation. Radioactive is a part of that. We have seen teenagers just blossom in that program, and you were a part of that by giving your financial support. 206-543-9595. And I would like to also do a shout-out to Kim, who said, hey, please note that me and my wife are longtime subscribers to both KUOW and KPLU. They're supporting public radio all over this city.
Well, was Kim saying that in part because Kim had sent in a sound of the day that we're going to hear later in the week?
Maybe so. Maybe so.
You know, our 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. We are here and we get to work here, and it is a privilege to work here and to work with all these great people and to talk to you and to talk to people about ideas. But we know it works because this radio station has been here a long time, an institution that people have supported, that you will support in the days ahead. You know, I was thinking that people talk about their children in the back seat or in the booster seat saying, oh, turn on something else, we don't want to listen to this. But then as they get older and they get into their late eights, nines, teen years, they're happy to hear it. You have not just indoctrinated them into the public radio spirit, you have taught them something that's important. So support it. Support it, William, because it's important what we do in this region and institution. For example, Almost Live, it's not being produced anymore, but it was important. And now a new show, Stepping Into the Big Empty Shoes It Left Behind, the 206, stars Pat Cashman, Chris Cashman, John Keister, premiered in January on King 5, then a brief hiatus. It comes back with a full season this month. We talked to the creators of the 206 in January. They previewed their first episode there. And I was curious how they got back on TV.
They'll give you space, but they will not give you anything other. They'll give you airtime, but you go out and you find your own sponsors. And that's what we did.
That's what's kept Almost Live from coming back. You know, for 10 years,
yes.
These guys have been getting people saying, hey, man, why don't you bring it back? For 10 years, people have been saying, well, hey, you're the young, why don't you bring it back then? Help. You can't. The money isn't there. People don't understand how that works. TV stations don't say, sure, well, here's a contract. We're not being paid by King. So we had to do it the old-fashioned way. We had the idea. It's a startup business. We keep telling people. It's like we're doing it out of the garage. We are the crew. You're looking at the writers. We're the, you know, editors, all of that stuff. We had to really bootstrap it. And the toughest part was going out and finding advertisers, and we're lucky. Northwest Cadillac stepped up. Alaska stepped up. Stingray Auto Repair stepped up. And Sturtevant Sports stepped up.
Four people. Okay, you got them all in. Board.
I was going to read them anyways, except that you didn't have Stingray there on the page. So okay. You might want to take care of that.
Through at the wire.
We'll take care of that if
they
you're
were
listening.
Last-minute hero.
It's good. Now we said Stingray three times.
Yeah.
That's good.
What does that mean? Does that mean they have committed to 20 shows?
$1 million each.
We don't have to work again is what that means.
Excellent.
No, they write a check, you know, and then, you know, we'll do some shows. If they like it, they'll write another check and we'll do some more. And that's the way it is these days.
You could have taken it to public television with something like that. It's all the same.
We couldn't get a meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, we're taking it to public television.
You need a little Downton Abbey in there.
Actually, what you're saying, yes, that's the model that was 30 years ago or however long ago in public television, that's the model that everybody uses now.
And you will have flash drives.
Isn't this hilarious? Isn't this hilarious so far?
Don't you have... Well, I didn't ask you to come to be funny.
Okay.
You're saving all that.
Right. You did that for the Seahawks, too, right? Now, what's the funding behind the shirts and this, right?
Yeah. I did ask him about how they feel about the game.
Yeah, okay.
How do you feel about your comedy work now? You wanted a public radio question.
Yeah, we'll let public opinion dictate that. You know, in this age, we've talked about this, too. Maybe it's our paranoia.
At this age, did you mean?
But social media and all of that gives people the opportunity to say unkind things about you no matter what. If Mother Teresa was still alive, there'd be guys saying, who's that old broad?
They're probably still saying that about her.
So,
I know I am.
We're the bags under her eyes.
We just are going to put out the best product we can. We think we're doing that. And there's some stuff to laugh at in there.
Yeah.
We always felt that Almost Live was... Its mission was to not try to do Bill Clinton jokes and all that sort of stuff. It was to make fun of the neighborhoods and the towns and this area and the people that run government here and all the rest that goes with that. And in that respect, the 206 honors the same pledge.
It's the 206. Are you leaving out three. What do we got? 360-253
Okay, you've now identified the really funny first question.
Yeah, thank you.
So is that going to run in the 425
Well, and that's the question. Is everybody wants to know? It seems like there was anxiety in the crowd and even online of people. Have they? I hope they haven't forgotten about Linwood. Have they forgotten about Burien? Or just tell me they? Because the truth is, things have changed. A lot of cities have changed. Ballard and all these places. So a lot of people say, "How are you going to make the same jokes?" Obviously, we're not trying to make the same jokes. Things have evolved, and 2013 has already provided a pretty cool new platform for us.
Yeah, there's suddenly it's the sort of thing where it's almost like a dream come true that just weeks, literally, before we go on the air, it's suddenly. Weed is legal.
Pot vending machines.
Yes, I was
telling my son if Top Pot Donuts didn't already exist, what a great name for a dispensary, Top Pot.
Well, yeah. All right. So there's things to be funny about.
Yeah.
Anything very local that you're anything you're not going to touch. No, well, of course not. Right?
You?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
KUOW.
Yeah.
Do not
mess with public radio.
No.
We'll come after you.
Certainly. I know that. No, I don't think we would ever.
There's nothing we have come up with yet that we thought, nah, we better stay away from that. I mean, you know, the truth that none of us have.
Language, though, right? You still have the language restrictions of typical of typical broadcast TV.
I think we push it a little bit more these days. I think we have. But, I mean, everybody does.
Really. I mean, we're talking about a very late night show here, for one thing, and almost live. Its last production was, what is it, John? 14 years ago? No,
yeah,
like that. So it's a different TV landscape now, and so we
smaller cameras.
And as we established, the model is different. That we're doing this independently. You know, we're not taping this at King. We're not doing this really even in partnership with them, other than that we're a broadcast partner.
Where'd you have the live audience?
We actually did it in the 425, the first taping. We did it in an old fire station that has been converted to a studio. And I think people will think that's neat, too. Folks wanting to connect the dots and assume, is it going to be the same? Is it going to be no, don't assume it's going to be the same. The humor will remind you of Almost Live, but the look immediately is very different. It's a very different looking studio. The setup, the audience isn't in grandstands. They're behind us. They're a part of the show. You see them in the shots. It's really neat.
But smells different, too, I think.
But you're always going to have a live audience. That's the goal.
Yes.
We think so.
We actually had talked about, again, the model from the ground up, thinking, okay, the landscape has changed. This way, I think last April that we decided we wanted to maybe do this. We knew it would be a steep hill to climb, but we talked about it. Let's put some stuff online, see if people are interested. Studios, too expensive. How would this work? We started really getting down to the basics again, going back to that entrepreneur thing. This was a startup out of the garage. We had a product, and all of a sudden we had orders for it. So we had to figure out how to fill the orders of laughs. So we tried to do it as cheap as possible. We said, okay, we're just going to do bits. We'll do raps on the street. But then fans were talking about this, so we said, let's do a live event. We held a live event at the Triple Door, and it sold out just through mention on Facebook, and 300 people showed up. We tested out some of the material, did jokes, and people were just so happy to have fun and laugh at ourselves again, that we knew something was happening. And once we met after that, we said, you know what, we got to rethink the audience thing, because that was neat.
That's
and
great.
People were thrilled to be there.
Yeah,
we're just sorry we came along post Greg Nichols. That was our biggest disappointment, but we'll move on.
You don't think you have mayor and mayoral candidates to mock in upcoming?
No.
Yes. No, Mayor McGinn is
all above reproach.
He's great.
He's off limits.
Yeah. No, he's good. What I enjoy about him is that he hasn't done enough for the cyclists in this. And I'm like, he hasn't done enough. That's all they do. I have this idea that if you ran a bicycle as the candidate for mayor, that would win. If you ran again,
And the final tally, the bicycle.
Mayor Schwinn.
Yes. Yeah.
You finally have Mayor McSchwinn.
Yes. Hold rallies at spin classes.
It's unbelievable to me. That's the answer for everything.
My people.
Here.
You and I are going out later and biking around.
Okay, good.
Here's a clip from one of the sketches you posted on your website.
Well, I'm voting for John because he's a leader and a great communicator. I've seen John talking to ordinary people. He even looks them in the eye, and he nods when they say things to him. And it's not just people in his neighborhood. I mean, I've seen John talking to construction workers. I mean, the guy's actually wearing a hard hat and protective eyewear. It's like he's one of them. His
ability to rally the community is really impressive. I mean, the guy runs the most successful fight club in the state out of his basement. I mean, sure, it's illegal, but John's looking to change that.
Passionate about getting to know people in his community, he'll walk from neighborhood to neighborhood just to rifle through their mail.
When it comes right down to it, I think that John really needs this. You know, I mean, the guy just sits on his porch day in and day out. Kind of depressing.
I'm John, and I'm asking for your vote because I want to bring about change. Now, we don't have to nail down exactly what that change is right now, but rest assured, if you give me the vote, I will find something that needs changing, and I will change it.
Vote for John, please. He really needs this.
That was Nichols' campaign slogan, too. Vote for change, Nichols.
Yeah.
So we kind of cribbed that.
That, of course, is not something that's going to run on the show. That was during, you know, pre-production.
I think I saw that ad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, I think you did. I think,
John was very bummed out by
a million times.
The fact that we weren't on the air yet in political season. And we said, well, come on, it's the Internet, it's Facebook. Let's do what we want to do. So we just wrote that up and got it and posted it.
These horrible ads that everybody does that when you turn on local television, it's just blanketed with the, tell whoever not to stop doing this, or you know, and here's a man, and just talking to random groups of people.
But this year,
and,
it's old men sitting around a table casually, unaware that there are cameras,
smoking cigars,
and they know exactly the laws that have been passed. The financials, they happen on top of mind. They happen to know all the figures and dollars.
That was my favorite commercial.
Those are just too
that
good.
Was a good one.
Too good.
You know, you're in the age of satire, right? And you have all these other satire programs that are at the top of the heap. Nervous. You're the voice of the new generation, Chris. It's all on your shoulders.
No, I mean, look, we are fully aware that there is a giant bullseye on our back, which we tried to get Target to sponsor. They weren't going for it. Mm-mm. But we know that, you know, no matter what, these guys, we're not trying to bring back Almost Live. We simply want to bring back – we wanted to bring back MASH, but they didn't go for that. Yeah. But we're just trying to bring back local comedy.
Again,
you know, something
also
funny and to people to connect the dots and say, it's not the same. You got – no, we just want to have fun again, and we're lucky that we had some partners that want to as well, and King 5 has been great in helping us make that happen.
The 206 with John Keister, Pat Cashman, and Chris Cashman, who you just heard. Full season starts in April. Kinds of, you know how important, I would say, I know maybe I'm going out on a limb, I found Almost Live to be very important. I loved it. Gave me a great sense of the city and the self-deprecating humor that we all enjoyed. And it made fun of the high five and white guys. So I enjoyed that show. That was part of what made this our home, part of what grounded me here and still does because I can watch reruns. Same with what the 206 will bring. Same, I hope, with what public radio brings you. And that's why we ask you to support it at 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869 for the comedians who come, for the great work of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, for just having a good time.
For the sense of nostalgia, for the reliability, and for the healthy future, we're counting on you. 206-543-9595. And you know what it's time for, Steve?
Know what?
Sound of the day.
So that's not a monster. That's not the wind. That's an elevator. The elevator at the Roosevelt Safeway, to be exact. Yeah. Listener Jane recorded that sound for us. She wrote that the first time she heard that sound, she thought it could be made into a scary movie or something. And then if you listen closely, of course, you hear the sound of shopping carts bringing you a little bit back to reality. Or the monster coming out and thrashing metal. That's a great sound.
That is super cool.
What interesting sounds are you hearing? You know what that is? That is the monster of Pledge Drive coming after us. 206-543-9595. Do not upset that beast. You do not want to rile that beast. Pledge your support right now.
Oh, 206-543-9595. I just love the sound of the day because isn't it true that sounds are We think of sounds as being so common, you know, something that we hear every day, but then you put them out of context and you just hear them without seeing what's making the sound, and it becomes a whole different thing.
You guys have made it such a great, it's my favorite segment, and you guys have made it happen. You have contributed. You have made this a great part of weekday, a great part of our day.
And I would like to challenge all of you who have gotten Sound of the Day on, which is lots and lots and lots of you. If you haven't pledged your support to this station, if we haven't gotten you, or if we have gotten you thinking about sound differently as you walk around the world, listening differently to the world around you, give us a call right now. Show your support. Pledge whatever amount you can afford, maybe 21 cents a day at $75, maybe 50 cents a day at 100 or at 200. Whatever works for you, give us a call, 206-543-9595. You can call us toll-free, 1-866-NPR-KOW, 1-866-677-5869. Weekday has an overall goal of $14,000 that we need to make by 11 o'clock, and we're not quite halfway there yet.
Oh, that's scary.
Which, you know, is like a knife to my heart.
But. That's very scary. So I think the sound we need to hear are the phones ringing from you, if you would, or the monster will come.
It sounds like the monster gets beeped there at one point, like if he's just getting so ferocious he's not appropriate for radio.
Do not beep that monster. 206-543-9595. We are waiting for you to call. Don't make us wait any longer. This is the time to do it. Join us. Be a part of this community that has conversations about what's happening around us and what sounds are happening around us. 1-866-677-5869 at KUOW-FM Seattle, KUOW-Tumwa.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.